RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Monday morning on RCR means health hacks, and Dr. Glenn Davies, reversalnz.co.nz, is back with us. And listeners, you can't see it, but I can, thanks to modern comms technology. You're hearing the audio, but I also see the pictures. And Glenn, great to have you back. You're in different surroundings this time, I've already noticed.
Yeah, so I'm now working 5 days a week again, Paul, which is good and bad. But yeah, I'm in Mangakino, which is a rural community sort of between Taupō and Tokorua in the North Island. A town with an interesting history in that it was really established when the hydro dams on the Waikato River were built. And then after they were no longer needed for construction workers, the town was sort of less used. Has had an interesting history, but it's sort of making a bit of a comeback as New Zealand's wakeboarding capital. So it's taken over from water skiing, I guess.
The wake of a boat. Okay. Yeah, there are a few towns in New Zealand that had hydro, set up for hydro, but were sort of left for a while. I'm thinking of Twizel as one, and there's a few around. So that's interesting. I think I've been through Mangakino once or twice in my life because my mother used to live up in Rotorua, so I used to travel through that area quite a bit. So what's it like now being in that small community? I suppose there's always needs, right? Health needs.
So I have this interesting experience. Reversal NZ is an entirely private lifestyle medicine practice. And then Mangakino is a rural general practice. So I sort of have that compare and contrast ability. And, you know, both forms of medicine are rewarding. They're just dramatically different. And I guess my end game is, how do we integrate the best from both of those sides and create a new version of the healthcare system that, you know, that is the best of both? And I'm sure that we can do that. The current general practice model is flawed, not meeting current need. But I'm sure if we can integrate the best from these two models, I think we can have a functional general practice again. And that's really what the ambition for the last 10 years of my career is.
And I know we've come along just, you know, John and come lately in that 10-year span, but I kind of feel that we're sort of on the journey with you.
Yeah, and you are because, you know, the landscape has changed so dramatically, hasn't it? And there is more ability to influence change from the bottom up. And I think that's what we're doing here, isn't it? You know, and that's really what we'll talk about today. But it's very, very slow for medicine to adopt the changes, but people make the changes and then they educate their doctors. And that's what I think is happening here. That's part of the ambition of all of these speaking engagements I do, of RCR Radio, of Health Hacks, also of some of the social media. We can create change from the bottom up, and that's how, in effect, that's how government changes. You know, they change because the people demand that change, and, you know, that's what I think RCR has demonstrated, you know, so very, very well since 2021.
And I can see from what comes into our mailbag, there's so much interest. I thought of you the other day, Glenn. I was watching a video on X, and it was a guy in a Dunkin' Donut shop somewhere in the US. And it was the pumpkin swirly thingy, whatever the product was. And he was breaking down what was in it. And the thing that stunned me, first base, was this thing, which, you know, was only in a regular size cup, contained 46 teaspoons of sugar. And many people were coming in and having multiple of these per day.
Wow.
Incredible, man.
Yeah, well, when you think in our 5 liters of blood, we should have around 1 teaspoon. You know, if that's got 46, you know, how can the body possibly cope with that sort of overload?
And I was just thinking, you know, what RFK Jr. has been saying publicly, you know, in the campaign and the poisoning of the food chain. And I thought, well, there you go. There it is. But we can't be too relaxed about it because that's kind of happening here as well.
Yeah, it is. And that's manifesting in this pandemic or epidemic of type 2 diabetes. But if you look at type 2 diabetes in a broader context, it's actually insulin resistance. And in the United States, 89% of American adults have insulin resistance. You know, if you think about that, that means that only 11% are metabolically well. So it has now become the norm to be metabolically unwell. And that's manifesting as diabetes, being overweight, having gout, having inflamed joints. We've talked about type 5 diabetes, and we've talked about type 3 diabetes. You know, all of these chronic health conditions are a manifestation of exactly the same thing. And what I wanted to do today was just go over the very, very basics of that, which you've introduced so nicely with that 46 teaspoons of sugar. You know, we've really got to consider sugar as a poison. We've got to acknowledge that all carbohydrates become blood sugar, and we've got to individually decide to remove that as much as we can from our pantries, from our fridges, from our daily lives, really to make a difference. Because if we don't, New Zealand will very, very quickly be in the same situation that America is, with only 11% of people being metabolically well.
Well, if that food's being served up here, well, food, sorry, wrong word. But if that's being served up here and it was up to me, I'd ban it.
Yeah. You made an interesting point there. There's food and there's non-food. And if it's not a food, it should be called a poison. And what is a food? A food is something that has recently been growing, swimming, flying, or walking. And if you use that definition, you know, that means it's your vegetables, your fruit, your meat, fish, your chicken, your eggs. There's not much else. And then everything else becomes a non-food, which is in effect a poison. You know, so if we just use that basic rule, it would be like going back to our great-great-grandparents who lived on a farm. They would have grown vegetables, had chickens, had some meat that they would have killed themselves. And, you know, that would have been it. And then if you go back even 200 years to pre-European Māori, same situation. They were eating kaimoana, birds, and some above-ground vegetables, and a small amount of kumara. And that was it, you know. So it's really just returning to that rule, recently growing, walking, swimming, or flying, and that is food. Everything else is a non-food. So if it has a food label, which I'd like to rename a warning label, you know, it's not a food, probably. You know, because if you look at the food label on a piece of broccoli, it doesn't have one because it only contains broccoli. The food label on a chicken, it doesn't have one because it only has one ingredient, chicken.
Contains, you know, chicken.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
And then, but, you know, you look at a packet of Twisties or Tim Tams, the ingredient list is so long. A lot of them you can't pronounce. There's, I think, about 170 different names for sugar because they're clever. They try and trick you. They'll call it maltose, dextran, or something else, you know, and just try and go for things which are foods and avoid the poisons.
Well, the other thing I remember about this product that I mentioned just before is it had pumpkin in it. But the other thing I remember from this this breakdown of what it actually was is it didn't have any pumpkin in it. It was all artificial flavorings of pumpkin, yeah. And they're all chemical, big, long chemical names. So none of that is real. And I wonder, it sounds like it's easy to determine what is real and what is not. So it should be easy to push these things out, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah. So does that happen from the bottom up, or does that happen from the top down? And I think it happens from the bottom up because...
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
From the top down, I think, and I don't understand all of these influences, but to me it seems obvious that there are influences that make it difficult for the regulators to increase regulation on these non-foods or poisons, because if it wasn't difficult, it would have happened. You know, there is no doubt that all of these chemicals in our food are harming us, you know, no doubt from the science, but it's not happening. It's not being banned. So there must be controls that prevent that from happening, you know, because the politicians presumably have our best interests at heart. And if that was the case, they, you know, they wouldn't be still available. The fact that they're still available, so easily sold to children, indicates to me that there must be pressures preventing them, you know, and I'm not necessarily suggesting that these are fully banned, but, you know, we've seen this with smoking. You increase the taxes on it so that it becomes a really difficult choice to choose to smoke. You know, that's an effective method. And the most effective control on the amount of cigarettes that are smoked is the price.
Yeah.
You know, I think we could do exactly the same with energy drinks, with Twisties, you know, and then it becomes a person's choice, but that choice is more difficult. You know, that to me is the fair way to manage this.
I don't want to bang on about anything because this is your time, not mine. But another thing I've seen this week in the media, and I feel sorry for them, the folk of Otara are queuing up at a local GP clinic at 6 a.m. because it takes weeks to see a GP. The queue is going up the street and they're out there in the cold and, you know, none of them look too healthy in the picture. Now, I'm not making judgments there, but nowhere in the reporting was why so many people are lining up to see a GP. And I would have thought that would have been the first thing you asked. Why are there so many people lining up every morning, you know, having to go and see a GP? Why is there such a demand? Because I know from talking with you and others on this that there are simple ways to prevent the frequency of that. And I would have thought that that would have been a question that was asked. And maybe the fact that it wasn't is speaking to what we're talking about now. It's a blind spot, or, you know, there's a misunderstanding of what is food, what isn't food, et cetera, et cetera. Just ignorance driving that one. But I felt very sorry for them, but that was the question in my head.
Yeah. So asking that biggest picture question, the difference between being healthy and unhealthy, it's very, very simple. It comes down to what we eat. And if we eat food rather than poisons, we will prevent the majority of these chronic illnesses. Now, it's not that simple, of course, because you can still get appendicitis, you can still get pneumonia, you know, yeah. All of those things will still exist, but the healthcare system can cope if it's not overwhelmed by this tsunami of metabolic disease or type 2 diabetes. And we heard that language used during COVID, you know, the reason that a lot of these interventions were put in place was so not to overwhelm the healthcare system, wasn't it? You know, that we were encouraged to have COVID vaccines so as not to overwhelm the healthcare system. We were, you know, encouraged so that we didn't have more people in ICU. You know, that was the logic, yet we are overwhelming our primary care system with all of this metabolic disease, this type 2 diabetes, obesity, gout, heart attacks, Alzheimer's, cancer. And it's the same logic. If we went back and dealt with the cause of the problem, we wouldn't overwhelm our healthcare system and people would be able to get an appointment with their doctor on the day when they required it if our waiting rooms weren't full of people with type 2 diabetes and these other manifestations of eating the wrong food.
Yeah. Now, I remember previous chats because we're kind of going over this again, and I think it's good to hammer it. You mentioned the American figure before, but here in New Zealand, what about 50% of our adult New Zealanders are pre-diabetes and diabetes? Is that about right, that figure?
Yeah. Yeah, that's about right. And I don't know, it should be 5%. I mean, it should be no percent, but it should be 5%. 50% is dramatically higher than what it should be. I think you only have to go back 100 years before type 2 diabetes virtually didn't exist. You know, this is a new modern condition. Diabetes used to be type 1 diabetes. It's now become, you know, almost exclusively type 2 diabetes, something has gone horribly wrong, particularly in the last 70 years or last 50 years, and it's getting worse and worse. And it's very, very clearly what we're eating. You know, and if we fix that, and if we all become involved in this mission of fixing the food supply, all the way from the government to the Ministry of Health, to the doctors, to the nurses, and to the people who are buying the food, we can solve this. But it will take all of that. But I really think our efforts, you know, what you and I are doing, Paul, is we're trying to persuade the individuals listening that it's important that they make this choice for themselves and for their whānau and for their friends and for their community. That's the way we will bring about change.
I also remember from our previous chats, because you talk about the price of things, I use the tobacco example there, making it difficult to afford really gets people's attention. I think I remember you suggesting that we maybe rename, was it diabetes?
Yes.
But maybe more general category as bad food disease. So it always carries that label. Every time it's mentioned, it's bad food disease. Now that gets in after time, that does, doesn't it?
Yeah. I would like to do that. My only hesitation is that, you know, there's a whole lot of individual choice involved in this, but it's actually a privilege to have individual choice. And you and I are privileged in that we can choose healthy food. The difficulty is for people who don't have that easy choice. So, for example, people on very low incomes, it can be more difficult to choose above ground vegetables and broccoli and cauliflower and high, you know, good qualities of meat, cuts of meat. That can be more difficult. And that's where I think we need help from government. You know, how do we make the healthy choice the easy choice? How do we make the healthy choice the available choice? And how do we make it the affordable choice?
I can tell you, Glenn, food stamps, a form of food stamps that only buys a particular range of foods, exactly what you're talking now, and good quality as well, because we can produce quality here. That's the way to do it, I think.
Yeah, I love that idea. And, you know, locally grown.
Exactly.
You know, that's helping our local suppliers as well. So, yeah, wonderful suggestion.
And people would take it if it was affordable. I mean, it doesn't need to be total charity, but it can certainly offset the premium costs. I'd be so happy and relaxed to do that. I really would be.
Yeah, I love that. Have you ever thought of standing for politics?
No.
Because I'd vote for you.
It looks too hard to me. You got to take too much stuff, and it seems that the good gets, you know, clubbed almost out of people in the first short time they're there. But that's easily done. That is easily done. And no one would begrudge it, I don't think, you know?
And you would, that might cost some money, but if you think of the savings in health, if you're preventing heart attacks and cancers and strokes and all of the costs that's associated with that and dialysis and lung amputation, the problem is the political cycle, isn't it? You know, the 3-year political cycle prevents that kind of forward thinking because it won't be manifest probably for 10 years. You know, so when we talk about this cross-party politics where some of these decisions need to be unanimous and outside of politicking, I think that's the kind of decision that would go really well in that sort of environment.
If we can get non-partisan agreement on things like superannuation, we will on energy because we're going to have to soon because we need the energy. We can get bipartisan buy-in to something that's sensible. And I reckon it wouldn't take as long, Glenn, as 10 years. And, you know, under a heading of fortifying healthy families or something like that, I think, anyway, that's just me. What do I know? But I think it's possible to achieve this in that way.
Well, Paul, I just mention an organisation which is called Whole NZ. We've spoken about it before in terms of research, but Whole NZ, which so Karen Zinn, who is a professor at AUT University, she's really leading this project. And what it is a group of people who are interested in creating a better food environment based around this idea of type 2 diabetes. The website's now really good. It's housing some wonderful resources. So Whole NZ, I think, might be the leader in this space, and it might be where this changes from. So any of the listeners that are interested, have a look at Whole NZ website and some fantastic resources in there. And if there's something to get behind that is probably going to lead this change, Whole NZ's the place to look.
And people can share the links, and that's a force multiplier when people do that. So go find the site, share the links. Okay, there are some baseline rules too from memory that people should remember. Glenn, we talked about renaming to bad food disease. That could be considered one. But there's also some baseline rules around what carbs are, what they become, what the treatment should be, the way to reverse this. And we've talked about the national priority part of that. So do you want to speak to some of that? All carbs become blood sugar, don't they?
Yeah. So let's just make metabolic health really, really simple. It is minimize your carbs. So to make it even more simple, sugar is a poison. Avoid sugar. So nobody should be putting a teaspoon of sugar into their coffee. Nobody should even be putting half a teaspoon of sugar into their coffee. And people go, well, it's just half a teaspoon. But remember, in your 5 liters of blood, you only have 1 teaspoon of sugar. So a teaspoon of sugar doubles the amount of sugar in your blood. You know, just don't do that. Consider it a poison. It's not necessary. Don't do that. And then these really sugary drinks, soft drinks and energy drinks, they are really poisonous. Avoid them. So first, I think, number one, don't drink sugar. And drinking sugar is even worse than eating it, because if you think back to caveman days, the only fluid available was water. You know, there was absolutely nothing else. And the body hormonally is set up for us to drink water. When there's sugar in it, our body gets quite a fright. It causes a stress response. So we really need to avoid drinking sugar as number one. So no energy drinks, no teaspoon of sugar in your hot drinks. Be careful of where sugar's hidden in hot drinks. You know, some of these sachets of coffee, you know, these cappuccino type sachets and Milo, again, lots of sugar added. So don't drink sugar. That should be your number one priority. Right. Then number two, don't eat things with added sugar. You know, so that's Tim Tams and chocolate bars and, you know, all of that, and lollies, you know, all of that obvious stuff that we all know that we shouldn't drink. It's expensive. It's unnecessary. It actually makes you more hungry, and it definitely makes you fat. You know, so don't do it. And don't reward children with those kind of treats.
That's a good point.
That is setting kids up to have a problem. You're stimulating dopamine, and you are creating this idea that food is a reward, or you have food when you're sad. You know, Dr. Surgery's always used to give lollipops to kids after they had a vaccination. Mm-hmm. You know, what's that saying? You know, you're in pain, have some sugar. You know, there's no lollipops in this surgery. That was one of the first things that disappeared. You know, I don't want to create this idea that when you're sad, you have some sugar. You know, that leads to heaps of problems later on, and you see it all the time, this carbohydrate addiction. So don't do that. But then the big point, and probably the biggest point I want to make this morning, is all carbohydrates become blood sugar. So we're talking bread, rice, potatoes, pasta, noodles, you know, all of those white carbs, the big four, bread, rice, potatoes, pasta, all of that becomes blood sugar, because all the carbohydrate is just sugar molecules linked together. When you digest it, They become individual sugar molecules which end up in your blood. And when you think about it, where else could it go? You know, once it passes your teeth, it becomes blood sugar.
Yeah.
You know, so all carbohydrates become blood sugar. And this idea that don't have white rice, but you can have brown rice, you know, it's just illogical. It all becomes blood glucose and it has to be dealt with. And any excess blood glucose becomes fat. And it's that simple. So carbohydrates become fat and carbohydrates end up in your blood. And what is type 2 diabetes? High blood glucose, high insulin, high fat. It's all coming back to carbohydrates. So you have to minimize it, you know. And I spend most of my day talking to people about ketogenic diets, which is 20 grams of carbohydrate per day. So for reference, one piece of bread is 15 grams of carbohydrate. So I'm encouraging people to get onto very low carbohydrate diets, equivalent to a whole day of eating about 1 1/3 pieces of bread. You know, so that's what I'm putting people on to reverse their diabetes, or a low carb diet, which is 50 grams. But it's no way is it up around the 300 grams of carbohydrates that most people are eating.
Yeah.
You know, people can handle that 50 grams, majority of people, but people are poisoning themselves with 300 grams. So that's basically the main message, is the carbohydrates are causing the diabetes and making us fat. And then, of course, there's so much more intricate science around the detail of that, but that's the basic point. And that's what I want people really to take from this. Reduce your carbohydrates. So what do you end up eating? You end up eating high quality proteins like meat, fish, chicken, eggs. Or if you chose a plant-based diet, you might be having tofu, chickpeas, beans, but those are high quality sources of protein. And you're eating healthy fats. What is a healthy fat? It's a traditional fat that has been around for 70, 100 years. It's not canola oil. It's not margarine. It's not sunflower oil. It's traditional fats like olive oil and avocado and fatty meat. Those are, and butter. Those are the fats we should be consuming, plus above ground vegetables. So we're moving into summer, and wow, what a change it's been just since the weather's changed. But
yeah,
we're into salad time, you know. So
a salad
which is, you know, full of lettuce, spinach, tomatoes. You know, that's with a steak, a fantastic low carb meal that brings about health, and it's not much more complicated than that.
Now that's the thing; it's not. Rocket science, that's a bit of a well-worn one, but it's true. It's not, and I mainly eat like that. Every now and then I'll have a Coke, every now and then, hardly ever. But you feel lighter, you feel better, you feel lighter, you know? You don't feel hungry or lacking energy. You don't feel weighed, I'm trying to nail the feeling, you know what I mean? You don't feel weighed down and sort of slothful with it, you know?
No. And the really good point you made there is when you eat in this way, your mitochondria come back to life. They produce energy in the way that they are supposed to produce energy.
Right.
And you have, we've said this before, 37 trillion cells. Each one contains 1,000 to 2,500 mitochondria. Each of them are producing ATP, which is energy. If we fuel them well and we look after them, they will look after us by producing the energy that our cells need for our cells to do anything that a cell has to do. An immune cell has to fight infections. A brain cell has to think, and a liver cell has to detoxify, and a kidney cell has to excrete. You know, all of them require energy, and when there's not enough energy, that's when stuff goes wrong. And you know, the key to producing energy is raw material. You know, if we're producing energy for electricity, it's hydro, it's solar. You know, you put the right raw material and then you get the energy out. We have to do that with our bodies. And in the end, it all comes down to energy, and that's the health of the mitochondria. So we look after our mitochondria first and foremost by eating well.
Let's leave it there, Glenn, I think. ReverseLNZ.co.nz if people want to explore more. And what was the website you mentioned before
you suggested? WholeNZ.
Yeah.
WHOLE, WholeNZ. It comes from the concept of whole food.
Yep.
And yeah, really good place to look for resources, and it will get better and better and better. And I think we at WholeNZ will be the avenue which will influence government and bring about the changes that you've suggested.
Sounds good to me. Thank you, Glenn, for another Health Hacks. We'll talk again, in about a week or so. It'll be great.
Okay, Paul. Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.